Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. We're living in unsettling times. Future historians will discuss what developed into, at times, daily protests following October 7, 2023 to present, as well as other monumental times in recent history, including throughout the coronavirus pandemic, and even before COVID-19 fully gripped the world. 2020 was shaping up to be a year of activism, with protest movements that gripped the nation, including anti-lockdown protests, where conservative activists gathered, mostly in April and May, objecting to social distancing measures. And Black Lives Matter, the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis on May 25th spurred a nationwide ongoing protest. And further with Black Lives Matter, culminated in a massive march on June 14th in Brooklyn, New York, in response to the epidemic of Black trans women being killed in the U.S., such as Dominique Remy Fells in Philadelphia and Ryan Milton in Liberty Township, Ohio. We had ongoing protests in Portland, Oregon, as well as a series of women's marches. Protesting is considered a protected political activity in California, whether the topic is immigration or war or another political issue here or even abroad. But your specific rights as a worker who engages in a political protest will depend a lot on the specifics of your employment situation and when, how, and where you decide to protest. Tonight on Your Legal Rights, with participation and assistance of the Labor and Employment Law section of the California Lawyers Association, we're talking about your workplace rights as a political protester, employment law in an unsettled and evolving world. And as always, we're eager to hear what's on your mind and answer your questions. Our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. Once again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic, whether it's protest and your job, First Amendment. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. But do bear in mind that we can't give precise legal advice without all the facts relating to a given case. However, we're happy to pass along legal principles, assist you in your decision-making. And while their legal guidance mightn't be the positions of their respective employers or their clients, my guests are here to help. Joining us tonight, Wendy Musell, a past president of the California Employment Lawyers Association, is a founding partner of the law offices of Wendy Musell PC, represents employees in wage theft, discrimination, harassment, retaliation, wrongful termination, and whistleblower actions in state and federal court. Ms. Musell represents public employees, including state and federal employees, as well as employees working for large and small private employers in all industries. And Beth W. Mora of Mora Employment Law is dedicated to representing victimized employees. She's a passionate and accomplished advocate for those facing a wide range of employment law issues. Beth's commitment to social justice and volunteerism is deeply rooted in her personal values. Due to her advocacy, Beth is often invited to speak, has published numerous articles, as well as been quoted in legal journals such as Bloomberg Law, The Daily Journal, or Law 360 on issues impacting employees and the legal community. From the courthouse to the boardroom, Beth is a committed advocate for her clients and community. And with that, Beth, Wendy, let me welcome you both to Your Legal Rights.
It's such a pleasure, Jeff, to be here on the show and especially to be joined with Beth on these important issues.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. Really excited to talk to you all today about this very, very timely and important issue affecting all of us in our workplaces and in our daily lives.
You know, before we go further, I wanted to stop with the real basic question that I hope will frame our discussions. But You know, is there a point where my First Amendment rights end? Is it at my employer's door? Or is it when my worldview differs from my employer's? Is there a real easy answer to that? We'll start with you, Beth.
That's a great question, starting with, is there an easy answer to that? And I think every day, everyone knows now, especially, there is no easy answer to an employment situation, and there is no easy answer to the First Amendment. Employees have a First Amendment right. And those First Amendment rights, those rights to speak in your workplace about political issues, can be limited by the employer, and they can be limited based by the time, place, and the manner in which an employee speaks. And they vary versus private workplaces, public workplaces, and the type of speech, the manner in which the speech is communicated. Is it on a personal device, an employer's device? All sorts of different factors. But yes, employees do have the right to speak. And I know all our very smart listeners know that because they've been seeing it day to day. And they've been seeing it much more as we become more commonly using of our devices and seeing speech occurring. But so, yes, they have free speech rights. They don't disappear the moment you walk into a workplace, virtual or in body, but they can be limited.
You know, we hear that freedom of speech, First Amendment. We hear, I mean, even kids know to say that phrase. Does that really apply to the workplace? I mean, isn't that really a matter of speaking out to your government? Or is it really something that affects the way we speak to one another? And how does that affect the workplace? Wendy, why don't I throw that one your way?
Sure. Well, it's a little of both. At first, we start with the U.S. Constitution. Under the First Amendment, we all have Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. But the question is, how does that impact us on a daily basis in the workplace? Similarly, under the California Constitution, under Article 1, Section 1 of the California Constitution, we have a similar right. So the first questions that I would ask in answering that question, Jeff, is, what is the speech and where is it happening? Meaning, are you working for a public employer? In which case you have much greater speech rights. So if you're working for the federal government, the state of California, a city, a county, for example, versus if you're working for a private employer, generally speaking, there is not a free-flowing free speech right, and a private employer can limit your speech so long as that limitation, of course, is content neutral. And we'll talk a lot more about that.
And let me just point out something really quick, because Wendy brings up some very important points about the difference between private and public employer. But something we all hear and we need to just keep in mind, free speech is for everyone. And it does include speech that we may not like. So I hear a lot of debate online about hate speech versus free speech. Free speech will definitely include protecting speech I don't like, you don't like, but that is protecting speech we do not like. That is, society rejects some of the speech and despises some of the speech, but that is free speech. The workplace, whether it is a public or private space, must have policies about this speech that is neutrally applied in the workplace, that is a fair policy, neutrally applied across the board towards everyone. That is in a public or a private space, that doesn't matter. So it is free speech. They must have policies about free speech and how they impose that policy in that workplace must be neutrally applied to everyone. Now, in the private workplace, in the government workplace, the law has defined what can be limited and what can't be limited a little bit differently. But both those workspaces have to have neutral of policies that are applied equally to everyone, or then we have claims of discrimination. It wasn't applied equally and neutrally to everyone. And we'll get into that later.
And we've spoken in terms of free speech in the United States Constitution. But doesn't the California Constitution have similar provisions?
Jeff, that's exactly right. The California Constitution, Article 1, Section 1, indicates all people are by nature free and independent and have inalienable rights. And among these are enjoying and defending life and liberty, acquiring, possessing, and protecting property, and pursuing and obtaining safety, happiness, and privacy. So there's an enshrined privacy right. And there are statutes that have been passed in California specifically relating to the scope of speech in the workplace and protecting political speech and actions, although within certain particular confines.
So we normally think of protests as coming from the left, but in recent years, we've seen similar protests coming from the right. And if I'm an employer, can I retaliate against some of my employees for some of the things that they say about not wanting COVID protection when that might take other people out of the workplace?
Well, that's where we go come back to that the policies need to be put in place to be neutrally applied. So from the Constitution, as Wendy pointed out, there is California labor codes, which state you cannot discharge or threaten to discharge an employee for following any particular political action or activity. And that would be 1102, California Code Labor Code 1102. And also California Labor Code 1101, an employer cannot make, adopt, or enforce any rule or policy that forbids or prevents an employee from engaging or participating in politics. So there's two labor codes there that, you know, fall from the rights of the government to create those laws that you can't discharge or threaten to discharge someone from engaging in political activity. And then there's also Labor Code 96K and 98.6, protects an employee from being demoted, disciplined, or discharged for lawful conduct occurring during non-working hours away from the employer's premises. And that includes political conduct. But all those policies have to be applied equally, regardless if someone's liberal or conservative or a woman or a man or a person of color or not. They all have to be applied equally and fairly and neutrally.
And Beth is exactly right. The right to free speech, I do want to point out, does not extend to libel, slander, obscenity, true threats, or speech that incites imminent violence or lawbreaking. Those are considered to be outside of the scope of protected speech, both federally and under state law. And additionally, generally speaking, an employee cannot be fired simply because they engaged in a political protest. For your example was about COVID, could be about other topics as well that occur outside the workplace, since this is considered a protected political activity in California. So one of the key issues here is this inside the workplace during work hours? Is this outside the workplace during non-work hours? And is this a public employee where they might be, for example, matters of public concern or which are protected, or is this a private employer? So, for example, if you had an employee who comes to the workplace and is having an in the workplace protest at a private employer, those are going to be very different rules than if you're a public employer, for example, and you're engaging in a protest outside of work hours. That generally does not impact the employer.
Right. So just to be clear, Wendy brings up great points. Private employers have more restrictions on political speech inside the workplace. Public employers have less restrictions because there's more political rights to speak in the workplace. Where we see more problems coming up, and we're seeing it more and more now, is when employees have on their social media, "I am Jane Doe and I work for X employer," on their public facing social media, for example. And then they engage in speech outside of work. We're starting to see this, you know, normal everyday crossover between their public life and their private, their work life, their public private life and their work life, and they're making their private life public and then bringing it into the workplace. And that's where we've seen a lot of crossover in our everyday life. And that causes the employer to be able to have some ability in the private workspace, some ability to limit that speech.
One trend I've seen in certain sectors is where people will have Facebook pages open to all their friends and whatever followers they develop, in which they've abbreviated their name, don't use their full name, and simply don't disclose their employer, so it doesn't reflect. Is that a pretty good prophylactic?
Well, I think, Jeff, it depends. Are they on their work computer on work time and engaging in speech that could be in violation of their company's non-discrimination policies? If that's the case, their employer does have the right, because it's using their server and their computers, to view that content. And I think a lot of folks don't know that. You could be opening your Instagram, your TikTok, your Facebook, you name it, your Snapchat, whatever, and utilizing it for what you think is private speech when it's really not. If you're on the work time on a work computer, your employer does have the right to monitor that and read it. And particularly if you're engaging in conduct that could be in violation of the non-discriminatory policies. So if there's a mixture of speech coupled with what could be considered hate speech or discriminatory comments, those are things that could get you fired in the state of California as well as in other states.
Yeah, I just want to pick up on something very important Wendy just said. So earlier in my comments, I said free speech does not limit hate speech. And Wendy brought up a really good point about that hate speech can turn to violent speech. That's not protected. Thank you for highlighting that. But employers can have very important workplace policies, and everyone listening should definitely pay attention to workplace policies and procedures. I can't tell you how many times people say, I didn't read it, I just signed it. I get it. It feels like signing documents when you get a car or, you know, just all these onboarding documents. They're just so overwhelming. There's so much, but there's so much, and there's a lot that you need to pay attention to. There's the electronic use policy, giving the employer permission to read everything that you engage in on their electronic computer system. But sometimes you're using your personal phone for work, so maybe you gave them access. Then there is the privacy policy, the anti-discrimination policy. So even if you're using your personal password-protected Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, but you're doing it on the employer's computer, you may have, under the electronic policy, given permission for them to have access to that. And that may overlap with some of these free speech issues in an investigation. It may overlap with a complaint that the free speech actually became discriminatory. So hate speech may turn into a complaint of discrimination. Even if it was free speech, it may still violate the employer's anti-discrimination, anti-harassment, anti-retaliation policy. So that is another policy. When it is handed to you, please read it. Please watch the videos. They're not the best acting. I appreciate that, but it is still designed to be understood. And so free speech does not excuse discrimination, does not excuse harassment and retaliation, and the employer has the right to govern that as well.
And the legal duty.
As you were answering that, I got a message from a listener who didn't want to speak on air directly.
Understandable.
It passed along the question. The worker is Jewish and has a white Aryan coworker. And at one point, a Hasidic Jewish patron comes in full garb with the passes and the beards. And the coworker whispers something derogatory about Jews, knowing that the caller is Jewish. To what extent is it protected or considered harassment against that person?
The coworker or the customer, sorry?
Or both? Well, it's not said to the customer. It's said to the coworker. So the Aryan coworker says it to the Jewish coworker, and it's clearly meant you know, as a dig, or maybe it wasn't, but nevertheless, it has that effect on the worker. What, to what extent is that speech protected? To what extent can a worker, can a, an employer respond to that?
So under California's Fair Employment and Housing Act, and there are particular requirements of non-discrimination in employment, and one of those bases is sex and religion, national origin, race, for example, sexual orientation, disability status. So, of course, this falls into the category of religion. So if you have one employee indicating expressly discriminatory comments to another employee, that can rise to the level of a violation of the Fair Employment and Housing Act. It also would very likely, if the employer has such a policy, violate the employer's non-discrimination policy. So where you're in the workplace and you have a worker indicating expressly discriminatory comments, we call that direct evidence of discrimination in our cases. And that's the type of evidence that'll get us before a jury, where you have comments that are expressly discriminatory. So this example could have been about race. It could have been about sex. Here it is about religion, but it's the exact same idea. You can't state discriminatory comments in the workplace to other employees and expect to fall under the penumbra of the First Amendment for protection. That's expressly a violation of the law in California's Fair Employment and Housing Act. And if that individual were to be disciplined and/or discharged, they would have a very hard time fighting that discharge or discipline.
You know, there's another element to ring here, that the discriminating against a customer also falls under the UNHU Civil Rights Act. And that would also include protected classifications similar to the Fair Employment and Housing Act. For employment, it is also for customers. And so this would also cover religion. So as an employee, if she objected to the treatment of a customer by another coworker, she could be a whistleblower of a violation of the UNHU Civil Rights Act. That would not be protected free speech in that regard, if that's what she's objecting to. She's saying that's not free speech, that's hate, that's discrimination. It's an UNHU civil rights violation.
Does it really matter if the comments were directed at the coworker as opposed to the customer?
It has the same effect, Jeff. So the fact that these discriminatory comments were being made in the workplace, and they could be just directed to both of them, knowing that they're both Jewish, or not knowing that one is Jewish, but one is, still, it's discriminatory comments in the workplace. If the coworker who heard that complained, that's a protected activity under California law. So they could not be subject to retaliation for complaining about that. The employee who engaged in that conduct would be, again, violating the non-discriminatory policies very likely, and certainly could run afoul of the Fair Employment and Housing Act. And Beth raised a really excellent point about the UNRU Civil Rights Act. You know, these, that act really prohibits discrimination on public accommodations. So things like stores, hotels, restaurants. You couldn't have, for example, a sign that says no gays allowed or no Zionists allowed. Those would be expressly discriminatory and would violate the UNRU Civil Rights Act, as well as other laws.
As well as other laws. The other thing I want to echo that we're seeing a lot more of these days is what people think are speech. Other people complain of discrimination. You don't have to be Jewish, for example, to object to discrimination against this customer. If it was against a gay person, you don't have to be gay to object against the treatment against that customer. For example, you, under the law, you might call that associational discrimination. Like if they're retaliated against, they might be a whistleblower if they're retaliated against. Some everyday language, we often call that bystander. The bystander objects and stands up for that person. But under the law, it's protected as either associational or whistleblower retaliation. You don't actually have to be the same class as that person to find it offensive and complain and then be protected.
Let me turn it over to Kevin from San Francisco. Kevin, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you for having the show. I'm a big fan. Two issues. I pursued with my former employer after I had a disability and tried to come back to work, and they were being difficult, and actually talked to one of your guests today, and they decided not to pursue it for whatever reason. But eventually the state of California did sue them, and I did win, and by the Civil Rights Division. So I have two questions that stem from that experience. The first is that I feel like I spent a lot of time not knowing what the deal is, because you cannot get a neutral write-up for anything concerning a need that disabled people have legally on this internet thing. In other words, I can learn how to repair a carburetor from an ancient car, or I can fix my stereo, or I can learn any esoteric thing in chemistry, but I cannot learn just what are my rights as a disabled person in a clear and coherent manner, such that it was eventually I figured out there's not enough, my impression was, I don't know this for a fact, that there was not enough money to be won, because it wasn't a major corporation, so it really wasn't worth law firm's time. The second thing is that if disabled people or any person keep on getting incompetent service from public agencies, there's not a clear way to pursue it. So, for instance, if you call the San Francisco Bar and you articulate very clearly with timelines the stuff you have been through, let's say with San Francisco Public Health or with Medi-Cal, where there are clear incompetencies and gross violations of just standard practices being a human being, it is up to, I think, a second-year law student on the phone to see if they're going to pass it on, which is not what I want. I want somebody who's sophisticated and has a command of settled law and knows what's going on. So those two questions, again, are one, why is there no clear write-up about how you could pursue compensation from an employer who is out of line? And secondly, what to do when you have public agencies not doing their job and you want to sue? Because I want to sue like three or four people, not just for me, but for thousands of San Franciscans who get really unfortunate treatment from all sorts of agencies on a regular basis, because they know that we're not going to pursue it, or that we don't have the money to pursue it because we're not rich people. Thank you. I'll stay on the line if you want to ask any further follow-up questions.
Well, Kevin, stay on the line for a moment. While my guests ponder your question, I'm going to intercede for a moment just because we're getting very close to where we have to break. So I don't want them to be 30 seconds to a minute into their answer, and then suddenly I'm cutting everybody off for a station ID. So we'll circle back to your question in just a moment. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we're talking about your rights as a protester. Do they end at your workplace door? Just what are your rights when you look at the intersection of the First Amendment, of the right of an employer to keep the business going, of the right of the people that are going in there? Just where do all these rights meet? My guest tonight, Wendy Musil of Wendy Musil PC and Beth W. Mora of Mora Employment, are here to help. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You don't have to jump in exactly where we are in our conversation. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. Back to you, Jeff.
You know, Kevin raised an interesting point or two, but I wanted to augment it a little bit and focus on one thing. I think you may have seen my briefing on this earlier, but even if a client has a legitimate claim, it may not be feasible for an attorney to pursue it, not only because of the time invested, but something where there's really no remedy provided or no money available may not be doable with a private attorney. And it might be something that we're fortunate to have some of these government entities to pursue. But let me turn it to you, Beth. Did you have a handle on the more specific questions that Kevin was raising?
Yeah, I think. I'm not entirely certain. And obviously, I can't speak about his situation. I don't know his situation, and you wouldn't want to speak about it individually. But every case and every attorney is very fact-specific, why a matter wouldn't be taken. It's so hard to answer as to an individual. So I really can't. What I can say is that a couple things. For the government agency or a public entity taking a case but not having the ability to manage it or take it forward, I think that there's a lot of truth to that. We're currently really struggling in California. There's a lot of people in need, and there's not a lot of services. Though I do think there's some agencies really trying, and we've seen a lot of effort put forth. There was also a report that just came out from the California Auditor's Office showing that the Department of Labor Standards Enforcement has a lot of work to do, and people have been asking for wages for a really long time, and some of their claims sat for an extremely long period of time that we refer to them as the labor commissioner. Sometimes it's a budget issue. Sometimes it's a structure issue. It just depends on the agency. But as to an individual, and it sometimes is the court. Sometimes it's the jurisdiction. Sometimes it's the employer. Sometimes it's the law doesn't allow for certain damages. It's just really hard to say. Everything is very different. And there's probably 20, 30 factors for each case why something is or isn't proceeded with. It's just there's so many things evaluated. And it's let me put it this way. For each person, it's hard. For each person, it's a difficult experience. So no matter what, those factors feel very difficult. And it's not easy.
I'd also like to follow up with some of the things that Beth just said. And the caller raised about the difficulty in finding information related to the rights in employment. There are some excellent publications that listeners may want to look at the California Civil Rights Division, CCRD. They have some publications online which talk about your legal rights as an employee. The EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, also has some very good publications and question and answers, including related to disability. And Legal Aid at Work, which is a not-for-profit organization, is outstanding in terms of if you can go online, they have publications that you can read about all sorts of topics, including disability discrimination, accommodation, discrimination of all types. And so I really recommend to the caller as well as to listeners that those are a wonderful place to get an overview if you have questions, for example, regarding discrimination based on disability or other status. And the DLSC also has some question and answers. For example, if you want to know about wage and hour violations, let's say you're not being paid for vacations that you earn, or you're not being paid for overtime, and you're wondering what your rights are, that's another great place to find in lay terms, question and answer format, information that may be very useful to you.
Thank you, Wendy. Those I agree with you on the data points. I don't know if I misunderstood, but I do want to make sure to point out that 211.org, I don't know if anyone remembers, if you're my age, we went 411 for information, how to get somewhere, where to go. 211 is a wonderful source to find free or low-cost services in your city or county or state of California. And it's you can go to 211.org online, or you can actually call 211.org. So if anyone wants to look at, I mean, literally they have everything. I would definitely suggest everyone look there for resources in your city or county. When you're dealing with an employment issue, it is very hard.
Additionally, I just have to put in a plug for the California Employment Lawyers Association, for which I was a past president. We do have online, we have over 1,300 members and who cover employment law of all types on behalf of workers. We have an online resource where you can search, for example, by city or type of issue and get names of attorneys in your area. So public employee, I'll say that I've spent my entire career suing public entities. And it is harder to find attorneys who have the specialty in that area. So I understand the difficulty in that. And, you know, it's because the state, it's good to be king. The state has certain immunities and which make it harder to sue, which could be a whole nother radio program.
You know, Wendy, you brought something up, and let me, for the benefit of listeners, we do occasional shows on labor and employment. I think it's a very fertile area for many more discussions than we have. And I very much enjoy them. My experience in regulating attorneys that are practicing in this area came from my brief time. I served as chair for a year of the Board of Legal Specialization. And attorneys that specialize in certain areas really develop an expertise and are rewarded for it by being able to say, I've been certified by the state bar and the Board of Legal Specialization as a specialist in this area. And they certify 11 different areas of law. We never took on labor and employment. I would have very much liked it. I tried to pursue it when I was the chair. But labor and employment is such a broad area. There are so many different parts to it. Nobody practices all of them. And to try to find a way to judge who's doing what and at what level of performance is very difficult. So sometimes you walk into an office and it might be somebody that's very good at what they do, but it's just, you're talking something that's not up their niche, but we're off topic. I'd like to steer us back. With that, I hope that we've answered your question, Kevin. You did bring up a good point, but it's a point that perhaps we could spend a whole night discussing and not get into the topic. But thank you. I do appreciate you joining us in your legal rights. Let me shift it over to Rafael from San Rafael. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yeah, thanks. So I have a little story that happened. I want to know if my employer's overstepping. So first of all, my Uncle Cesar, he was in a little domestic incident, and he was arrested. And there's some doubt as to whether it actually happened, but he got arrested. And they found out he was an undocumented worker. And because of the arrest, they were going to deport him. And so me and a couple of my cousins, Chewy and whatever, and we went down to ICE, and we protested over there because we thought they were out of line. And we also protested outside the, I forgot her name, the local congress lady. And my employer, I guess they made a complaint or whatever, and so my employer called me into HR and they said, yeah, if you ever do anything like that, we got to let you go because it's in your contract, you can't be disruptive or whatever they called it, public nuisance or any of that. And we didn't do, all we were doing was, we were just loud, and that's it. You know, one of us had a mega horn, and that's it. But, yeah, so I want to know, can my employer make threats like that?
Super interesting. Did you get a sound ordinance complaint from a police or anyone that you're aware of?
No, somebody just called. They took our names down, but there was no complaint. But then somebody called my employer from somewhere. And my employer called me in, my HR department called me and said, you can't be doing this.
So this is, the question I would have is, why would anyone know who your employer is? Were you wearing, for example, like a work shirt?
Oh, well, they took down our information. I guess somebody looked into it. They said, what's your name? You show ID, whatever. No, I wasn't wearing a work shirt.
Okay.
To me, that would be a game changer, wouldn't it? I mean, it's one thing. If they found out and just and ratted him out to his employer, the employer's then, from my perspective, probably out on a limb, even participating in the discussion. But if he's wearing a work shirt, a UPS driver, they're wearing the uniform and everybody associates that, wouldn't that be the company sending a message?
Right. Like the questions I ask leads you towards understanding you didn't get arrested. And even if someone's arrested, you're innocent till proven guilty. So when someone's arrested, Labor Code 432.7 says the employer cannot actually terminate someone or discipline someone who's been arrested unless that arrest can impact the employer's business. So, for example, if you're a police officer and it affects your you are engaging in violence or something like that. Sometimes we see this comes up with teachers, depending on what they're arrested for. And so it depends. So yes, you have to look at California Labor Code 432.7. I don't know what was going on here. Sometimes you see situations where individuals are wearing work clothes or driving a work truck or doing something in the interaction that then triggers the employer.
I was driving my city vehicle. It said city and county of San Francisco on my truck.
Well, Wendy, with her work experience with the public employers, will probably feel that a little bit better, but that might have triggered some sort of issues for them.
So in terms of the California Labor Code, I would encourage you to look at the two Labor Code sections that Beth had talked about earlier in the hour. Labor Code Section 1101, which states, no employer shall make, adopt, or enforce any rule, regulation, or policy forbidding or preventing employees from engaging or participating in politics or from becoming candidates for public office, or B, controlling or directing or tending to control or direct the political activities or affiliations of employees. I would also recommend that you look at Labor Code Section 1102, which prohibits employers from coercing or influencing or attempting to coerce or influence employees through or by means of threat of discharge or loss of employment to adopt or follow or refrain from adopting or following any particular course or line of political action or political activity. Objecting to ICE and immigration's activities certainly could fall within the realm of political activity. Another aspect to this particular situation is if you're using a work truck, an employer does have the right to regulate how the work trucks are utilized, for example. So if you're utilizing work equipment in a way that was not authorized by the employer, they certainly could address that. But this appears more speech oriented. So those are definitely areas that I would look into, and whether or not there's a policy that's being utilized in a way that would discourage improperly employees from engaging or participating in politics, which is particularly prohibited by Labor Code Section 1101.
All righty, Raphael, thank you for calling. I hope that answered your question. And let me turn it to Betsy from Antioch. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello?
Hi, Betsy, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hi, thanks. This is about workplace violence. And now, is there a way to, if a family member knows that another family member has a history of violence and since then has made other threats, is there a way to anonymously find out where they work and warn the employer that this person has not made any direct threats anything about his workplace, but because of his history, you know, really, shouldn't the workplace know? And shouldn't they, even if you know, you call anonymously and don't say who that employee is, shouldn't they just be stepping up their security measures?
Well, as of July 1st this year, two new labor codes came into effect in California, which required employers to have new workplace violence protection plans. And we discussed those at great length for at a few of our past radio shows. And the employers will have new policies and procedures in place for that.
This is for another state that he's living in.
Not in California.
Right, right.
The concern I would have is that what I would suggest you do is in the state you're looking at having this communication with someone is that you look at some of the self-help centers through the courts in that state, and they'll have domestic violence or restraining order violence clinics. And you can talk to them about what are someone's rights in that state about getting restraining orders. Or you can talk to a legal aid in that area that might be able to help you with domestic violence situations and what you can and can't say to someone without triggering potential claims. Or, you know, you don't want to open yourself to potential liability for, let's say, defamation. But you want to stay within the confines of what are some of the protections under that state's, let's say, labor code about workplace domestic violence. So okay, California great. Has protections that maybe don't exist in other states. So definitely look up some self-help clinics at the courts there or some clinics that might exist in that state. Every state's different, unfortunately. Did okay. you have anything to add, Wendy?
No, I would just state that, and you know, which is not directly answer to this question, but there are protections under California law related to prior convictions as for applications for employment, for example, which is our California Labor Code Section 432.7, otherwise called Ban the Box.
Ban the Box.
And so simply having a prior conviction is not necessarily something that an employer can know, or there's limits of when the employer can know that. There are some legal protections under the labor code. So I just wanted to
know. That's good to know. Now, since he hits violence and he has been a felon, I have voicemails of him calling and threatening me. And so I would love to be able to share those, you know, as evidence that, you know, he's still volatile. And now, that was like, since, you know, that was 3 years ago and I blocked him, but the family is protecting him and there's nothing I can get the family to do. And so, but I don't want to keep sitting on this. And he's still at his workplace and he's still working there as far as I know. But, so I do have, you know, some, and he has been admitted before to, a psych ward because he was threatening to kill himself. And so, you know, before his threats to me and, you know, again, after all that, I blocked him. But so, you know, the psych ward knows about him. The police may know about him. Cause he has a felon, and, you know, he's got this felon record and he has some DUI in a few states. So, you know, he has those. That again, I mean, I'm all for a ban the box kind of thing. I just, you know, he's drinking very heavily too, and so I just don't want him to be a danger. So I guess the labor laws in that state, I will look at those self-help tools and gradually, you know, find out what I can do safely, anonymously, and what resources there are, you know, and to hopefully, you know, move this forward.
But the real, for purposes of today's show, the real question is, what kind of resources, if any, is an employer responsible for to provide for safety?
And do you mean for free speech, or do you mean for our caller?
For purposes of our caller.
Well, the caller isn't an employee. She's so if she would probably best served from calling one of the clinics and see what they suggest, because it's a different state. California is quite different than most states. Being in California, let me put it that way.
You have a lot of protections here that you wouldn't have in other states.
Yes, and we thank our legislators for that.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us, and let me turn it over to Jerry from San Francisco. Jerry, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, I'm Harry. Maybe they misheard me.
That could be, or it could be a typo, but Harry, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the show and all of the excellent advice that you guys have been giving to people. And in this day and age, workers need good information, and this is a great place to get it. My question and comment is regarding Raphael, the employee of the city and county of San Francisco, who appears to be retaliated against by his employer for engaging in activities while in possession of a city vehicle. And I really appreciated how he was given information about the labor code, relevant labor code. But just one other thing, maybe I missed it, but the vast majority of workers for the city and county of San Francisco are members of labor organizations. And I think that if he has a union representative, it might be a great idea for him to check in with his labor representative, and also as a union rep that deals with the city and county of San Francisco, he might want to look at the statement of prohibited activities in the employee handbook, because I think that the advice that you guys gave him was spot on, and that he is being treated with a very heavy hand and inappropriately. I just wanted to put that out there. Maybe you guys said it and I missed it.
No, we didn't. We didn't. You covered it beautifully.
Well, thank you so much. And, people are very fortunate if they work for the city and county of San Francisco, because they have union representation. If only union density was 100%, then all of our jobs would be easier. Thanks for your time.
No, Jerry, thank you for years. You got to come back more often. Thank you.
I will. Maybe someday I'll use my real name. It's not Harry Bridges, but I am also concerned about retaliation from my employer when it's the city and county of San Francisco. They definitely do things like this. Thank you for your time.
Good luck.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Bye.
And we're getting fairly close. We only have a couple minutes left, but with the phone call, we did really shift from where we had been about activities at work and sharing opinions or posting things that maybe should or shouldn't be, to what activities outside the workplace. Is there any brief comment you want to throw in there?
In terms of conduct inside the workplace, again, private employers can regulate that, and as so long as it's neutral. So, for example, if you had raised issues that have happened, since October 7th, if there's going to be policies, they have to be content neutral. They can't be in favor of one side or perceived one side or another. Let me put it that way. And so, you couldn't have policies as an employer that only regulates one point of view. You have to have a neutral policy that regulates all political content, or you're going to get yourself into trouble in terms of discrimination complaints or violations of First Amendment rights and California law. So I really encourage employers to take a look at their policies and see if they're content neutral, even if they have the policies. If you don't have policies, particularly given that this political season is heating up, and with some of the Supreme Court decisions that have come out recently, we're only going to have more protests. And so it's a good time to make sure that you have the policies and procedures in place so that you're treating your employees fairly and equally and in conformance with the law.
There was an employee some not that long back who was working for a network. I won't mention which one, but a radio network, and was fired for attending a protest. I would think that if that was in California, that person would have had greater protection. If the network was government-owned, would have had greater protection. But this was not government and not California. My suspicion is things are different here.
Yeah. I mean, I want to point out an example. There was the march in, what was it, Atlanta? What was the one in there was a alt-right march, and there was tiki torches, and there was a gentleman who was wearing his work shirt. He just didn't go change. He got fired. It makes sense. He showed up to a protest that turned violent. Someone died. He was wearing his work shirt. Just change your shirt. Don't engage in violence. Like, there are certain things that we understand with common sense. You should use your free speech rights, but you shouldn't engage in violence. We want to encourage people, most attorneys, we want to encourage people to speak and engage. We want to help you do
maybe
that.
Maybe speak for yourself and not your employer when you're going to protest.
You know what? I don't have a problem with you speaking in the workplace, but know your workplace policies. Don't engage in discrimination.
I hate to cut you off. We're just about out of time, and I know I kind of invited that. But
you did, Jeff. You did.
I do want to give each of you about a minute. We're really tight on that. So we got about 2 minutes total. So Wendy, why don't you jump in? You got about up to a minute.
So I think as we head into this political season, both employers and employees need to review what their rights are and what the policies are. Employees do have a right to engage in off-duty free speech so long as it doesn't otherwise impact the employer's business. For example, you're wearing the work short or indicating that you're from X corporation, so it would appear as if you were communicating a position of the employer. And employers really need to know that we do have rights under California and the labor code, and that despite what the employer's own political beliefs are, they cannot impose those upon their workplace. And for example, indicate that only discourse about one party is okay and another political party is not okay. They're going to run afoul of the labor code. And those are things that I think employers and employees need to be well aware of as we head towards the election.
And Beth, you've got about a minute, probably closer to 30 seconds.
Well, what I'll say is Wendy said it beautifully. I'm glad we covered this topic because I don't see the workplace and or our political spaces getting softer and less complicated anytime soon. So I encourage people to use your free speech rights, but I encourage you also to read your policies and procedures. I encourage you to read them and understand them. Ask questions if you don't understand them. And be mindful of your peers. You have a right to speak, but you don't have a right to engage in discrimination, harassment, or retaliation. And you have a right to complain if you think you've been a victim of discrimination, harassment, or retaliation, even when someone thinks they're engaging in free speech. So engage, protect yourself, and ask for help if you need it.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM San Francisco. Tonight, we've been talking about your free speech rights and your rights as a protester in the workplace. Our guests tonight have been Beth Mora of Mora Employment Law and Wendy Musil of Wendy Musil PC. Tonight's show was produced by Beth Mora. Recent decisions in the United States Supreme Court have continued to upend what, until recently, we all considered settled law. Be sure to join Your Legal Rights next week, Wednesday at 6 o'clock, where, as always, we will take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to tonight's guests and the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association. And on behalf of Your Legal Rights, a big thanks to all of you for listening. And at the controls, Joanne Marr, I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night, and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, The Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.